Federal Drive.
Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department's Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Office of Information Technology and the Principal Deputy Chief Information Officer. Steph, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now, you are a return guest to the show, but just in a different role. As we were talking about earlier, you came on the show as when you were the CIO at the Federal Trade Commission. Now you've obviously moved over to VA a couple years ago. Talk about your role as the Principal Deputy CIO. What do you focus on specifically?
I'm effectively the Chief Operating Officer for an 8,000-person, a $3.3 billion per year business. So my job is to make sure the day-to-day operations of this large, complex organization take place, whether it's service delivery out of our operations organization, or building and delivering products, or making sure that we're securing the information we have. So it's making sure all those pieces move together to make sure the VA can do its mission.
Now, how does that fit in with, obviously, Roger Baker, who is the political chief information officer, but also the assistant secretary for Office of Information Technology? How do you fit in there with him?
I work directly for Roger. So, if you will, we're the, I don't know if it's a good twin and evil twin, but his job is, if you will, set the vision. And the other CIOs, the deputy CIOs, who are all IT employees, work directly for me. So the leadership team is that we have 23 senior executives in that leadership team. They all work for me, and my job is basically to take that vision, those goals and objectives that come out of Roger and the leadership, and figure out how do we execute them, how do we implement them, and then continue to do them every day.
So you get to implement Roger's vision. I don't know if I should say good luck, or that's a great job, or I'm sorry. Because obviously, Roger's out in the front in many ways.
I would take the first two. It's a great job. I mean, tremendous opportunities. I think one of the things that we're showing is how do you move quicker? I mean, one of the things that the federal government has been known for in the past is it takes us a long time to get somewhere. But we've shown, and actually at the Federal Trade Commission, I was also able to show with the Do Not Call Registry, you can do things quickly if you focus what you need to get to, you get the barriers out of the way, you have clear lines of authority about how you want to get there, and then execute. And we've been able to move quite fast on a lot of complex items.
And we were going to get into some of those because as we talk about some of your priorities. But before I do that, let me ask you a little bit about how those deputy CIOs work for you.
There's five. And what's happened is the VA centralized its IT organization. So it's unique among the cabinet agencies where all IT resources work within one organization. They're not spread. They're not dispersed. They're not distributed. So I have five direct reports who work for me. I have two deputy assistant secretaries and three deputy CIOs. So I have a deputy assistant secretary who's responsible for financial management. As given we're a $3.3 billion organization, there's a lot of things we need to do to make sure we execute appropriately. We also have a DAS for information security. He's out on front in terms of making sure we're protecting that information. And then I have three DCIOs, one responsible for service delivery, in other words, the operations and data center organization, one for product delivery, development in terms of how do we move those things forward, and then the final one is in our architecture, strategy, and design organization.
As you said, this is a new construct in many ways. This just kind of came about over the last few years. Is it working? I mean, obviously, if it wasn't working, you'd change it. But what's been the growing pains? What have been some of the challenges to kind of set this organization up?
It is working. And I'll give you one statistic to lay out why we know it's working. If we go back just 2.5 years ago and we measured how were we doing on delivering products, delivering systems, we were sitting at about 30 to 35%. So we were meeting a schedule commitment. Customer said, I need X to do Y, and about 33, 34% of the time we did that. 2.5 years later with PMAS, 80% of the time we've delivered on a commitment. And what that means is 320 new capabilities have been deployed that directly impact the benefits and services that we provide to our nation's veteran. And that's a measure that says, you know, in the past when you're running decentralized, you're sitting at about a third. Centralized, where you've got clean command, clean authority, and the ability to move, we're up at 80%, and that's best in class. class anywhere you measure it.
And I know you guys have gotten a lot of attention for the PMAS. So let's talk about that a little bit. I know we're going to get into some of your priorities in a little while, but where is PMAS now? How's it going? Obviously, as you said, about 80% of the time you're delivering on your commitment, but it's been around for now, I guess, for just about 2 years or so. How's it changed? Give me a sense of where PMAS is heading, where it's been.
Where it's come from is, wow, great idea, but that's hard to do. Too, and as you said, Roger's a great person to work for, very driven and dynamic and impatient. It was like, yeah, this isn't 5 years from now. We're going to do this now. So the first year was a lot of growing pains of, yes, we're serious, and yes, we're going to do it, and bring the measurements along with it so we know daily, how are we doing against those targets? So it was a lot of growing pains. Are you really serious? Yeah, we're really serious. Now, how do you do it? And doing it, and actually talking about it every day, putting the guidance in place, putting the processes in place, putting the oversight mechanisms in place. So when projects are running into trouble, they don't tell you after the fact. Every week we have a call, we call it a red flag call, where any project manager throughout the IT organization, in fact, throughout the whole department, if they have an IT project that has a problem, throw the flag, either myself or Roger Cherrett, and we solve those problems at that point in time. So it's this change from, you know, we're going to work on it a couple of years, to, no, every day we are going to work on meeting these delivery commitments. So there's weekly meeting on that. There are program reviews. There's oversight. There's a daily dashboard that we look at. So what we're doing now is we're embedding it in the culture of the organization so everyone understands why this is so important. So when we talk about PMAS, it's a project discipline about how you manage things, we've now moved that into the other parts of the organization. Our development organization actually runs in a competency model where we don't have people hardwired into PEOs. We have them sitting in competency pools. And as the project needs a particular skill set, we bring resources in, federal staff as well as contract staff, utilize them, put them back in the pool, whether for retraining or reallocation to other areas. Our whole acquisition cycle has changed. The T4 contract that we are putting in place allows us to go from a task order to vendor showing up to do work in 30 days or less versus 120 to 180 days for normal contracting versus 120 days on average for hiring. We're moving to 30 days or less to actually mobilizing resources, putting them on projects such that you can meet that 6 month or less increment.
The pools are fascinating because I know that is something that agencies have talked about doing. Maybe we need one for project management. I've heard that over the years. How did you set it up and how's it working? Because that's a little different. Instead of, you know, saying, all right, Steph Warren, you're going to work on this project for this amount of time, you know, forever, you are moved from project to project to project. And that's a big culture change.
It is. And we're basically doing dynamic allocation of resources. And when we say resources, it means people, it means dollars, and dollars represent either buying things or buying services from folks. So we essentially spent a year wrestling with the old way against PMAS. And what we found was we were not getting full value for the people. So there are folks being used 10%, there are folks being used 200%. And that really wasn't fair to either side. The 10% were probably enjoying it, the 200% were not. So it's like, get them into a pool and then find a balance of when they actually need to be applied and utilized, and when they're not, make sure we're training them. Make sure they have an opportunity to work on their quality skills and their performance skills. So we took the organization, we moved from a hard hierarchical structure, we moved them into pools of folks still having a leader in the pool, but the leader in the pool is responsible for the training of the employees. So when they get assigned to an increment, they're ready to go. They've got the knowledge, the experience, and the support structure such that they can deliver. So a year we wrestled with how to do it under PMAS the old way, quickly came to a realization, ran out of people quickly. Going into the competency model, we're able to increase the number of projects we were running by at least 60%. And that was showing, if you will, our rough wastage of people sitting in a PEO structure versus a competency model. And again, we're continue to reinforce that into the organization, because as you rightly pointed out, it is unusual, it is foreign, it is contrary to what practice has been in federal bureaucracies.
Can you go through real quick, where do you have those pools? Is it project management? Is it acquisition? Is it technical skills? Is it all of the above?
It is in the development organization. It is project managers. It is master schedulers. It is developers. It is integrators. So it sits in the development teams. Any skill set required to deliver a product that we've made a commitment to, those individuals run out of a pool structure.
And roughly how many people per pool structure? I know they're all a little different, but is it 3 to 5, 6 to 10?
Right now, the total number of folks who are sitting in a pool structure is about 450 FTEs. So that is the number of folks we've applied to our projects.
And the contractors, too, because you have contractors sitting
there? Well, no, we don't. One of the things you have to be very careful of is you don't pool contractors, because, again, then you have this issue about contractors being utilized as a federal resource, which they're not. So contractors get applied as services. So you're never saying, oh, I want Joey or Sally for this period of time. You have a contractual relationship for an outcome. So our work with contractors is outcome focused. We need somebody to come in and write this plan, or we need somebody to come in and develop code. And when I say somebody, it means a team to come in and develop this type of code to meet this requirement, or to put together a master schedule that takes these into consideration and looks like that. So they're really two different things. We try very, very hard, and we've been very successful. You don't treat contractors like your salaried employees, because it's inappropriate.
All right, I'm going to take a quick break, but I'm going to come back and talk a little bit more at these pools, because I think they're fascinating. I think that's a trend going forward. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department's Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Office of Information and Technology and the Principal Deputy CIO.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's Capacity Services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department's Principal Deputy Chief Information Officer. Now, Steph, before break, we talked a lot about the PMAS program and the idea of pooling resources, people, to work on specific projects at specific times and then putting them back in the pool. And you said you had 450 full-time equivalents or people. Did you already have people on staff that were ready to go in those pools? Or over the last year, had you had to train people, hire people? And then training is always that thing. When budgets get tight, training gets cut. How are you dealing with that issue as well?
To the first one, it's all of the above. So what happened was, is a year and a half ago, when we realized we were running into a resource wall, we took all the folks who were working in the development organizations on these different teams, and we basically said, organization's broken. What we're going to do is we're going to detail you to teams. So we need to make sure work was happening. We were needing to make sure that we continued to deliver on our commitments. And while the folks were detailed into the team, so at any one time, we probably have about 100 projects underway. And when I say projects, those are increments of work that we've made a commitment to deliver customer-facing functionality or outcomes on a six-month or less increment. So there's about 100 of those underway at any one time. So that's the number of pooled teams that are working. Right, whether it's a couple of federal folks who are directing services coming from vendors or a full federal team. So we detailed folks into the teams, and while they were continuing to work, we stepped back and asked, okay, what are the competencies that we need to have available to project teams? And so what we then did was we put together the organization focused on competencies, and then we spent the time over the last year hiring folks with specific competencies we needed, as well as the leadership that ran each one of those competency pools. And that we looked at as a critical hire because the leadership or the managers in that competency organization, they have one priority, and that priority is to make sure the individuals on their team in the pool were fully qualified to do the work that the project teams needed. And so there's this major problem you run in project teams is the project team is focused on outcome. And training always seems to take the back seat. And what we've done is we have an organization whose leadership's responsibility is to make sure the staff receive the training and the counseling, if you will, in terms of how do you do this. They do this peer process of working across the folks in the pool. Hey, you had a master schedule. How did you do it? How did you work with this? How did you handle that? And then we have a project team where they now get resources that have the skill set and their focus is on outcome. So we think we've actually found, I won't call it the secret sauce, but a good blend of what you need to put in place to get a motivated, qualified, quality workforce that is driven to outcomes.
Obviously, the success of PMAS is one priority. You're still kind of moving it forward. What is some of the other priorities? What are the other things you're working on from a broad perspective over the next 6 or 9 months?
Let me break that into two large chunks if I can. The first thing in terms of goal priority is to make sure those three transformative goals that the VA's laid out, ending homelessness, breaking the back of the backlog, and access to quality care, we meet all of the IT commitments necessary for that to happen. So a lot of energy and a lot of effort is going into those three huge goals, and the department is making dramatic progress on all of those. Now, to do that, to make sure that transformation happens, we needed to change how IT does work. So back to your question, what are you doing? So as the chief operating officer, besides making sure those larger departmental goals are being met, my day-to-day focus is changing IT, changing the culture, changing the business practices. And we've broken it into five areas. The first one is customer satisfaction. We measure customer satisfaction, we analyze the results, and we make changes such that our score was 64 on a scale of 0 to 100, the same methodology that J.D. Powers uses. 6 months later, we were at 67, and this last report, we're sitting at 71. Our target is 74 as a measure, and we're sitting in the top quartile now for IT organizations from a service delivery standpoint. So it's how do we make sure customer service is baked into the organization. The second one we've already talked about, product delivery. How do we make sure we meet that 80-cent commitment? How do we make sure we continue to deliver customer-facing functionality? The third one is on the security area. It's how do we make sure in when we build things and we provide those services, we treat the veteran's identity with the same respect that we treat the veteran. You can't utilize those benefits if identity theft has taken place. So a lot of focus on how do we make sure the data is secured and we're not cavalier with the treatment of it. So a lot of focus on visibility to any device. So there's a dashboard on my desktop and Roger Baker's desktop where he can look at the condition of the department, every desktop, every laptop, every server. Where is it? What condition is it in? Does it meet the configuration standard or not? And if it doesn't, what are we doing to bring it into compliance? The fourth one is how do we make sure we continue to deliver quality services? So it's a lot of work on instrumenting the different applications we have, the infrastructure we have, to make sure we're doing end-to-end measurement. It really doesn't matter if a server is up or down. It matters whether the Veterans Affairs employee can sit at their desktop and get to the systems and tools they need to do their job. And it matters whether the veteran can get to those services that we expose to them and do what they need to do to get those services or benefits. So it's a lot of focus on put the tools in place to measure, but based upon those measurements, make changes in the quality and level of service that we're delivering from a IT standpoint. And the last one deals with value. And it's getting away from talking about, well, I spend money, and what I get for it is contractors do stuff and I buy stuff, to we expend resources and there's a value generated for our veteran or their beneficiary. So changing the way we manage and measure our expenditure of resources, people, time, or dollars, what are we getting? What does it mean from a veteran standpoint? And so when you are able to move the organization to think that way, you can actually make very easy decisions on how do you prioritize work. Right? You measure it in terms of what's the outcome to that veteran or their beneficiary. Is it a measurable difference or not? And once you have that, the way you manage your resource allocation, to put it blunt, becomes relatively trivial because it's a value conversation. It's not a, oh, I really want to spend and buy these servers. Well, what for? What are you trying to accomplish? What's the outcome we are trying to get to? Keeps me pretty busy.
Yeah, I was going to say, your plate is full. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some of those priorities. In the meantime, you are listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Steph Warren, VA's Principal Deputy Chief Information Officer.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's capacity services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department Principal Deputy Chief Information Officer. Now, Steph, before break, we talked a lot about your priorities, and you laid them out really interestingly from a broad perspective. You talked about product delivery and security, and the last one you talked about was value, the idea of just saying, well, we're spending money and this is what we're getting, but more, what's the value that VA, that this IT is bringing to your customers, the veterans? And I think that's something that you're going to see a lot of agencies move toward. How do we calculate that value? And a lot of times we hear about the return on investment. How are you calculating it? I mean, what are the measures or metrics you're using to say, are we making it better for the veterans? Are we making it better for our internal customers?
Something that we've actually wrestled with, because the limitation that you run into, especially if folks say, well, what's your return on investment? In the federal side, we focus a lot on obligation. Right? It's, okay, I put the money on the contract, okay, let me move on. When in fact, that's actually just the first step of the process, because once you've put the money on a contract or obligated it, you actually need to manage the contractor workforce in terms of, did they actually deliver on the schedule they committed to? Did they actually deliver the thing you wanted? So it's a change in how you measure and monitor things. So we actually have a basic operating plan. It's a couple of thousand lines long. And for this fiscal year, and we did it for last fiscal year, which was our first year, we have a line item for everything we're going to spend either at the contract level, so for every contract, or for every product we're going to deliver, those six-month increments or less. So we're actually able to measure the spend, if you will, so the first part. We also have a time system, especially with our developers. They actually track what time they spent on what project. So we're able to not just look at where we're spending dollars in terms of buying products or services, but also where are our staff working and what are they focusing on. So we're able to capture that, put it together, and then the last piece, which is, okay, so what does it mean from a veteran standpoint? What did we actually change? Was it the completeness of what they submitted? In other words, were we able to reduce the time it takes to process something? Were we able to help reduce the waiting time for something? Or were we able to help reduce what it took the department to do something in terms of reducing the number of employees that they spent on an administrative piece that by us automating or bringing those tools to the table, they were able to reduce their workload on that and apply those resources to things that touch the veteran more directly. So you put all those pieces together and you start getting to that question, what are we getting for it? And again, it's not a box or wire. What is the value to that veteran or their beneficiary? Was it faster? Was it quicker? Was the quality up there? Was there less rework? Were the administrations within the VA able to apply more resources to their fundamental mission, which is delivering those benefits or services to our nation's veterans?
How hard was it to find those metrics?
We are constantly refining those metrics. I have a program review with the senior staff once a month. We spend 3 hours going through what were our targets, what were our accomplishments. It is a pure data-driven conversation, and it's agonizing. But we're able to see, okay, what services did we deliver? What commitments did we make? What's the security posture like? What's our spend like? Are we on target? What's the outcome we're trying to get to? And we are constantly evolving the measures we use because we know we don't have it right yet. And I think that's key to this type of change, is this focus on being a learning organization. I don't have the answer correctly from 3 years ago. I'm constantly interrogating. I'm constantly evaluating and reevaluating what we're doing, why we're doing it, to make sure we continue to tune and we continue to move down that path of providing benefits and services to our nation's veterans.
Let me jump over another big initiative that part of this recommendations is the idea of mobile devices. And VA is one of the first ones to actually allow iPhones and iPads on its network. It started in early October. How are things going? Any unexpected challenges or roadblocks? How many actual devices are on your network?
We've put an order in for 2,000. So we're starting the ramp up to it. I think the one thing that really makes the difference is, if you look at that iDevice or any mobile device as a new thing or a different thing, you run into, well, why that one versus the other ones? And the thing that Roger helped us to see was, this is actually just like a website. It's like a desktop. It's like a laptop. It's just a consumer or generator of information. If you put the right controls in place in terms of how you use it, it's just like any other device. And so that thinking and making sure you put the controls in place such that is the reality. And we have a couple of hard rules we've placed, like any application that's built or used is FIPS compliant. The fact that the data is encrypted and encapsulated in the application, so no data sits resident on the device, whether it's an iDevice or an Android device or something else. And there's about five or six hard ones we've laid out. And if you live with those religiously, it's just like any other device, and all it is just adding something more to what you support from a service standpoint.
I think that's very true, but still, because they're new and because people say, oh, well, this is the first time an agency is allowing, from a broad perspective, iPhones, iPads, or whatever the device is on its network, I think that's why it's looked at more specifically and more closely. And I guess the other question is, 2,000 devices, how are you buying them? Are you going through a specific contract?
It was a single contract, and it basically done through our TAC organization in New Jersey. So it's a single buy. Off of an existing contract, so we can make sure there's still some controls on it. Because, again, you need to make sure you rigorously enforce it. And I remember when BlackBerries were first introduced into the environment. Oh, my God, what's this thing? You're untethering us? It's the same thing we've already done. It's just another one of those, and we've done that. And we've successfully done it and managed it. When I say we, I mean the IT community. So suck it up. It's just like one of those, and put the same disciplines and controls that you did for those.
All right, Steph, sounds like we could talk for another hour, but unfortunately we're out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today was Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department's Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Office of Information and Technology and the Principal Deputy Chief Information Officer. Steph, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
My pleasure, and if there's anyone out there listening who wants to come to the VA for a challenging job, we're hiring.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM WFED, your source for federal news now.
Have you been in government contracting, procurement, or acquisition for 30 years? NCMA has. Join the National Contract Management Association for the 30th Annual Government Contract Management Conference, November 14th and 15th in Bethesda, Maryland. The conference draws more than 1,000 government contract management professionals. Hear from respected speakers such as Scott Gould, Deputy Secretary, Department of Veterans Affairs, Martha Johnson, Administrator, GSA, and Shay Assad, Director, Defense Pricing, DOD. Learn more at ncmahq.org today.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Gordon Adams, Professor of International Relations at American University.
Employment in the defense industry has shrunk by about 1.5 million people over the last 25, 30 years. The industry is not at all afraid to shed people when it's in its business interest. So there's something kind of hypocritical about the appeal that says, oh my gosh, don't cut the jobs, this is valuable labor force, when every business will turn around and shed people and turn it in for technology if they can.
Hear the entire interview online.